So according to Herodotus then, these warlike Lycians preferred death to captivity and even killed their women and children rather than allow them to fall to the Persians. And in fact, you may think that this is just some sort of exaggerated story, but the French have been excavating at Xanthus, and they came across a deep layer of burning on the Xanthian Acropolis, dating to the time of the Persian attack around 550 BC. So this dire event seems to have really taken place. Now, the fall of Xanthus meant the fall of Lycia, because Xanthus was the chief city of the region of Lycia. Now, I've talked about what it meant to be part of the Persian Empire, and I mentioned that one had to pay taxes to the Persian governor or satrap, and also provide arms and weapon in time of war. Now, occasionally, when it was deemed necessary, the Persians would install local leaders to rule regions, and these local leaders would be answerable to the Persian satrap. And that's exactly what happened at Lycia, what happened in the city of Xanthus. The Persians decided that it was better to have a local dynasty rule Lycia, but one that could be trusted to follow Persian commands. The Persians installed a local family to rule Lycia through the city of Xanthus. And of course, they adhered to all that the Persians wanted. For example, when the Persians attacked Greece in 480 BC, we know the Lycians contributed 50 ships to Xerxes' armada. Excavations undertaken by the French at Xanthus in the 1950s and 60s have revealed the prosperity of the city during the 6th and 5th centuries BC. Now, the Lycians, like the Phrygians and Lydians, express themselves through the construction of impressive tombs. Now, of course, we've seen tombs in the Phrygian and Lydian world formed by tumuli, these big artificial mounds. The Lycians had a different means of celebrating their dead. They favored highly visible stone monuments, usually decorated with beautiful sculpture. The most impressive of these took the form of a tall stone pillar that supported a small tomb chamber in which the ashes of the deceased were placed. And these often were erected in the most visible and public part of a Lycian town. This is quite strange because in normal communities, the dead were placed far from town, outside of city walls, out in the countryside. But the Lycians preferred to have their dead right in the city center. So one of the most impressive of these Lycian tombs from the city of Xanthus was found erected in the heart of the city center, right in the market. And it's a tomb that's called today the Harpy Tomb. It's named for the reliefs of winged women that decorated. Now, the tomb is a solid pillar of stone that stands about 15 feet tall. And then at the very top, the four sides of the upper chamber bear sculpture. And some of the scenes are taken directly from what we know about Greek art, scenes that we find over and over again in the West. One of the scenes shows a warrior departing for war, and he's handing his armor to his wife. And we find that in Greek art all the time. Another scene of the tomb seems to be developed directly out of Persian art. And we've already seen how in Lydia, the elite were using Persian artifacts and Persian scenes to show their elite standing. Well, on this tomb as well, it's clear that the tomb owner is somehow referring back to Persian art. And the way it works on this tomb, on the so-called Harpy Tomb, is that the most important scene on it shows a seated leader, an older man with a beard, who has attendants behind him, and directly in front of him is a kneeling figure offering the seated figure a rooster. Now, what we think is going on in this scene is that the seated figure is the tomb owner, and probably the Lycian king, whose father had been established as ruler by the Persians. We think this man is King Kesiga, about whom we know very little. But what's interesting is the positioning of the figures, with the seated king and people standing behind him and in front of him and a figure kneeling before him, is exactly the composition that can be found in royal scenes from Persepolis, the Persian capital. And so the imagery on the harpy tomb intimates that Kesiga is sort of self-aggrandizing himself, portraying himself like the Persian king. And I'm not saying he's trying to take on the role of the Persian king, but he's showing himself as a leader in terms of kingship as described by the Persians. Now, it's interesting that his son, a man who I want to spend a little more time talking about, named Cuperli, actually broke free from Persian rule altogether. So Kesiga may have been portraying himself as a king in the guise of a Persian, but his son actually breaks free of Persian rule altogether. Now, Cuperli is a fascinating character about which I wish I knew more. Our understanding of him is very sketchy, but he appears to have had a very long reign, from about 485 BC to 440 BC.